This is a recording of ISIS International from the Global NGO Forum on Beijing Plus 15, held in New York in February 2010.
ISIS International, documenting feminist visions, creating critical communications, and strengthening social movements.
I remember in the very wee hours of the morning of September 15, 1995, this was exactly 5:25 a.m. to be exact. Through the euphoria of final consensus, that was the main committee when we finally agreed on the Beijing Platform for Action, I made a personal vow that I would nurse my Beijing hangover for as long as I could, in myself and in others, for the difficult task of implementing the platform. 15 years after, I confess that I still have a bit of that Beijing hangover. And I hope that the Beijing 15 process of review, celebrating gains, recognizing gaps, identifying new and emerging issues, reaffirming our commitment to the platform, and seeking innovative strategies for implementation will bring back and strengthen the spirit of Beijing as we face the challenges for the future. The past 15 years, or 35 years for that matter, since Mexico, is expressed well by the theme of the Asia-Pacific NGO Forum on Beijing Plus 15, held in October 2009 at Miriam College in the Philippines. Weaving wisdom, confronting crises, forging the future. Actually, we will be distributing this copy of our final declaration sometime during the day. Indeed, we are all older and wiser now, although as Gertrude says, we all look 15 years younger. We have learned much from our successes and failures in the implementation of the Beijing Platform for Action. We are aware of our strengths as individuals and as collectives. We have a better sense of our allies, actual and potential, and we see that these may come in all shapes and sizes. We are more than ever convinced of the importance of networks and alliances, the importance of partnerships. And it is in this area of partnerships that the organizers have asked me to focus my remarks this morning, specifically focusing on government-NGO partnerships as a result of the World Conferences on Women. Looking back on the Beijing process, reveals important partnerships in the preparations for the Fourth World Conference on Women, at the conference itself, and in the implementation of the Beijing Platform for Action. I think many of you who were there will recall that the preparations for the conference involved a complex consultation process at national, regional, and global levels. There was NGO-GO partnerships in the national and regional preparatory meetings, at the expert group meetings convened by the Division on the Advancement of Women, at the Commission on the Status of Women in New York as the prep COP for the conference, and finally in the conference itself. At the conference, the plenary sessions and the meetings of the main committee were open to all delegates, NGOs, and the media. The main committee had two working groups, and the contact groups also, they were also open to all delegates and NGOs and close to the media. Only delegates had access to the informals. Access to meetings for NGOs was a thorny issue way before people reached Beijing. And now, listening to the reports coming in about our access now to the CSW meetings show that not too much has changed since then. But in the final analysis, the Fourth World Conference on Women was highly participatory. The broad-based interest and involvement at the national, regional, and global levels was unmistakable. The partnership with NGOs throughout the process, though not without tension, was unparalleled. The conference benefited tremendously from the networking and partnerships of women's groups since Nairobi and prior to Nairobi. And basically, the highly participative and basically horizontal communications combined with the emotionally charged atmosphere, and of course our very colorful costumes. We're not very colorful this morning, but yes, the very colorful costumes generally, had people from the outside perceiving the process as very chaotic. But I had many discussions with ambassadors who were so concerned about how chaotic the meetings were. But actually, it was just clearly different from the typically gray suit, hierarchical, formal, male atmosphere of most UN meetings. I'd like to say that the Beijing process demystified the processes and procedures of UN meetings. As a result of the UN conferences of women, the women's movement is no longer the lone voice calling for change. National machineries and other government counterparts recognize the value of exchange, information sharing, capacity building across sectors, and they work together with civil society and private partners in the implementation of the Beijing Platform for Action. The World Conferences helped establish that protecting and promoting the human rights of women are obligations of the state. This is a principle with universal acceptance, although sometimes this is just formal acceptance, but at least it's formally accepted. Directly or indirectly, civil society, especially in democratic societies, helps states realize this principle. Of course, the forms of engagement may vary from collaboration to critical collaboration to opposition and even confrontation. Undoubtedly, states have a lot of the resources and they have a lot of control over these resources. So ideally, these resources should be used efficiently and effectively for the realization of women's human rights. Civil society, on the other hand, with its organizations often small, more flexible, and staffed with highly competent and motivated people, has been the cradle for innovative approaches for realizing women's human rights. If you review the reports of governments on how they have implemented the Beijing Platform for Action for the Beijing Plus 15 review, you will see many reports of government NGO collaboration. I have some examples listed here, but in the interest of time, I will just say that it does represent a wide range of the countries. And I was just reviewing basically the Asia and Pacific region. If I may, let me just recall a couple of examples from the Philippines. Just very recently, in the area of women's rights and strengthening of the national machinery, we had the enactment of the Magna Carta of Women last August in 2009. This Republic Act 9710 is a local translation of the Convention on the Rights, Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, or CEDAW. GO-NGO collaboration characterized the nationwide consultations, dialogue, and technical work in drafting this landmark legislation. Another, I thought, quite innovative and interesting example from the Philippines is this Gender Justice Awards, now on its second round. It aims to recognize judges who, through their court decisions, demonstrate correct understanding of gender-related laws and exhibit gender sensitivity. The entries are court decisions penned by judges, male or female, on cases of violence or discrimination against women. Here too, we had a very broad spectrum of society, Philippine society, cooperating with in order to bring about this gender justice awards. So while our partnerships have been very generally desirable and beneficial, it had its problems, its pitfalls, and its perils. And again, among these problems were, and this is true all throughout the relationship, unequal relationships where there's more power with one partner over the other. And generally, this is true of governments. Governments just have more power and more resources. There are also the problems of ideological differences where conservative and patriarchal governments find trouble working with all except the most traditional NGOs. And also, of course, we have style differences, leadership and representation issues, sustainability issues, which I think we should know that basically right after Beijing, there was a lot of attempts at NGO consultations. This petered out over the years. And now, so every time we have a Beijing Plus 15, there's a little bit more interest in this, Beijing Plus 10, and now, Beijing Plus 5, Beijing Plus 10, and now Beijing Plus 15. But this is not sustained throughout the years. Aside from the lessons of partnerships, our weaving wisdom includes other valuable lessons. We see that our favorite strategies over time have begun to reveal their imperfections. We are less starry-eyed, for instance, about microfinance, which we realize must move to a different level. Also, we realize that we have to be careful about gender mainstreaming, you know, that basically its approach could actually be working against women's equality and women's empowerment. We have to be careful that the MDGs are gendered and so forth. I'd like to say something about crises. We've had to confront a wide range of crises over the past 15 years. The conservative backlash from governments that were champions of women's empowerment in Beijing. So much has changed in them over the years. The moral authority of the United Nations is now in serious question. Participation of civil society has been severely diminished. Also, the global trends of religious and ethnic fundamentalisms, growing armed conflict, the dark side of globalization, the financial crisis, the disasters of conflict of climate change in our region, tsunamis, typhoons, floods, dust hurricanes, bushfires, earthquakes, etc. But at any rate, through most of these crises, we realize women are not just victims, they are an important part of the solution. And now, we must forge the future. Just some parting words here. We have to strengthen our partnerships, our GO-NGO partnerships. We have to remind national machineries for women that they have to remain in touch with the women's movement. Also, I think we have to partner with a wider range of members of civil society, those who may not be particularly interested in women's issues, but we have to engage them in our advocacies. We also realize, I must say this, but although Charlotte will get into that in more detail, we must review our partnership with the United Nations and stake our claim in its reform. We must get involved in the UN reform process and continue pushing for the appropriate women's empowerment and gender equality architecture in the UN. Finally, we also realize, strong point for gender equality architecture. We also realize that it is necessary that we work on ourselves. While in general our commitment to our cause has remained strong, we must admit moments of discouragement, weariness, and even boredom. Over the years, women activists have begun to reflect upon and turn to the spiritual dimension of their lives, the transcendent, the spirit within us, which will help strengthen our movements and help us continue the work. Wisely, we know that we must care for and nurture ourselves. And let me end with this point, that while I welcome with enthusiasm the many young women in our midst, I'm also so thrilled to see many old friends from Beijing days. I am happy to know that we are still active, because one of my Beijing gems of wisdom is that tenacity and steadfastness eventually pay off. More power to us. Thank you.
This speech was brought to you by ISIS International. For more audio reports, please tune into the ISIS website at isisinternational.org.